What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum as well as mints. It's got caffeine, L-theanine, and vitamins B6 and 12. Helps with memory and focus. I'll chew a piece whenever, before a big meeting or, before just really, really anytime I feel like I need a little bit of a mental boost, before a workout or anytime I'm driving around making calls or showing houses to my clients, I'll just pop a piece of NeuroGum and gets me to where I need to be. So get out there and try some NeuroGum.
All right. Also, shout out to our people over at Captain Beard Co. So if you're looking for incredible products that are made with all natural ingredients for your beard, body wash, shampoo, conditioner, and even amazing smelling candles, check out Captain Beard Co., a local company here to St. Louis. Their stuff smells amazing. They got the beard butter, balm, and oils, and then the shampoo, conditioner, body wash. Again, made with all natural ingredients. And if you use the promo code Zach and Pat, you'll get 10% off your purchase.
Also, shout out to our friends at Hand Wraps Rolling Papers. Hand Wraps is a local company here to St. Louis. Justin Bricker is the owner of the company. He's a friend of mine, and they make the highest quality rolling papers out there, I think. They have rice and hemp. You can find them in 16 local dispensaries here in St. Louis. If cannabis is legal in your state, get out there and try them if you see them. So really good stuff. So thanks to Hand Wraps for helping us out here. Now to introduce our awesome guest. He is a husband. He's a father. He's an entrepreneur, a former pro fighter, the host of the Easy Talk podcast, the great and powerful Arian Zetke.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. Welcome, so happy, man. To have you, man.
Happy to have you on here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, right? Guys in the trenches, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure. Right. Yeah. Being on the other side of it now, it's got to feel a little different for you.
I was saying this off the camera, but I'll say it on. It's so nice being a guest compared to the host because it's like there's so much prep that goes into it.
For sure.
I just showed up.
Yeah, just show up and sit down and look pretty, Well, Arian, why don't you tell, the listeners who don't know you just a little bit about yourself.
So I went to the University of Missouri, St. Louis. I got my undergrad degree in finance with a minor in accounting. And I currently own a couple businesses myself. And I want to be careful because I always promised my employer that I would, when doing the podcast or doing anything public like this, I would keep things vague because the nature of my podcast can be sometimes controversial.
Sure.
My role in my company is a symbiosis of both financial and technology, combining those. And it's been, it's what's changed my life. Kind of broached into information systems about 4 years ago. And I'm very glad that I did that. It was scary at the time because, I went to school, finance, and I thought to myself, what is the trajectory of this career? What is the future of this industry? I was developing a skill set that wasn't necessarily credentialed, the same way I had finance. And it was very scary to kind of take that leap, change jobs. Looking back, it was one of the best decisions I ever made in my life. It's awesome.
Yeah, amazing. And so, you fought professionally for a number of years. How did you get involved in martial arts?
That was kind of, I owe a lot of who I am today to my first wrestling coach, Devon Ford. He literally changed my life. I can name about four different things that have happened throughout my life, where if those four things had not happened at the time they did, I would not be the person I am today. I would be, and I know that, because it's either the skill set, the moral equivalence learned from these traumas or decisions that should change the trajectory of how I thought as a man and as a person. Devon Ford would have never approached me when I was 13 years old and told me to wrestle. I'd be. For sure.
So that's one of the four?
Oh, yeah.
Devon Ford. Would you mind elaborating on the other three?
Yeah. So Devon Ford, when I was 13, he would have never got me into the sport of wrestling. I would have never learned a lot of the... How do I put this? A lot of the skill sets that aren't seen. Mental skill sets. Comfort with being comfortable. Being hard. Due diligence. Pride. Your effort. Sport of wrestling, I think, is good for everybody. Women, but it was exceptionally important to me because it made me grow up. The second part would be when my mother passed when I was 19. That really forced me to, you know, if wrestling grew me up, death of my mother made me a man in a lot of ways. We weren't really well financially. It was just my father's income. My brother was still a senior in college, and I was a senior in high school, right? The third one would be proposing to my wife. And then the last one would be being a father. I guess the fifth one would be switching my careers. But of those five, each one was so important in a different way because they established a new root in my tree, really branch out who I am as an individual. Wrestling taught me a lot. The death of my mother made me take on responsibility that I needed to have. Proposing to my wife and choosing a partner, I think sometimes as men, we like to think that everything's on our shoulders, but I would not be the man that I am today if my wife was not complicit with some of the responsibilities that I am taking on. In a lot of ways, I'm a selfish man. I'm doing things, then asking her to follow me. And I found a woman that believes in me, encourages me, tells me to go. If I didn't have her, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. So that's a big one. When I left finance, I didn't have a job. I literally put in my 2 weeks and I said, fuck this. You, I'm out. I was able to find a job in a week. And I never even missed a pay cycle. And I remember being so scared because I thought to myself, yeah, maybe I'm not as smart as I think I am. Maybe I don't have the skill sets that I think I do. Maybe I'm just not that guy. I mean, not to say that I am, but let's just say I was pleasantly surprised at the market because the market is the great decider. If you think you're a genius, if you think you're this, that, or the other, go get a job. Yeah. If someone's going to pay you $100,000, then you're worth $100,000. If they're not, then you're not. And that's the great decider. That's the beauty of the market. It's the beauty of capitalism. I thought I was at a certain level. The market told me the real level that I was at. That's what also changed my trajectory of my life. And then lastly, being a father.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys, I don't need to say it to you guys, I would advise all men that want to have kids to have kids. It will make you better. It puts life into perspective.
Couldn't agree more.
It's five things for you.
No, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Those are great.
Those are all great things. Yeah. You know, one thing I do kind of, we were talking a little bit before the podcast started, kind of when you switched your career from finance to information systems, you know, what kind of led to that? You know, I don't, you know, we might be kind of repeating ourselves here, but we didn't get it on camera. So, what kind of led to you switching? Because I find that really interesting.
I think there's a negative connotation to the term automation. And I always say that automation is a tool just like any other tool. Gun in the hands of a bad person could be a deadly weapon, right? But in the hands of a good person could be something to protect and to
save lives.
Save lives, yeah. Automation is similar in that respect, where you can automate with the intention of liquidating or, you know, essentially capsizing a team and laying people off and saving money for a company. That's one way to look at automation. By all means, just like a gun can be in the hands of a bad person and a good person, so can automation. I like to think of my way I work and the way I do things now is a reflection of what I saw. When I was working in finance, we worked with all these softwares like SAP, SQL, what have you. And more of our job was getting automated by these softwares. So when I first started, I was managing a portfolio of about $80 million a quarter. And I noticed, like, every quarter there'd be some sort of update, one of the four softwares that we were using. And 40 hours turned to 37 hours. 37 hours turned to 34 hours. And all my peers were like, this is amazing. Oh, my gosh, pretty soon we won't even have to work. And I'm like,
we're not going to have work.
Precisely. But more than that, because that's not how it happens. You don't automate a team and liquidate, terminate. What happens is you go from 40 hours a week, 20, and then what they do is they'll lay off half your team. And then they'll take the other half of the work, pack it back onto you. Now you're back to 40 hours a week until they do it again, 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 until they do it again. I want to stress that there's nothing wrong with that inherently. If you're doing a job that's inefficient, if you're doing a job that's highly manual and can be automated, by all means, you shouldn't have that job. That is my moral stance. I do not choose an unproductive society, or don't choose humanity to go into a direction where they're now being intentionally But I do think that automation opens up boundaries for new jobs, for new things like that. You know, when there was the horse and carriage, and they switched to the automobile, Model T and horse and carriages at one point in time rode on the same dirt roads. Okay. Over the course of time, people more and more adapted and formed to the automobile. Why? Were they worried
efficiency.
About efficiency? Yeah, but were they worried about the horse and carriage drivers or the nints or you know, all the equestrians that were raising these horses? There are jobs that are lost with the innovation and progression of time and humanity and society. But with that progression, jobs. And the way I look at it is, if you're looking at your job as this manual task that you hate to do, because it's like the same repetitious bullshit, someone comes in there, that's it. You can look at it as like, oh my God, I lost my job. Or you can look at it as like, great, now I'm free from this. Is there like another skill set I have? Exactly. Yeah. And here's something you can't do. You can't automate soft skills. You can't automate selling a home.
Right.
You can't. You can automate
parts of it.
Parts of it.
Yeah.
Sure. Parts that you don't want to fucking do.
Right. But right. Shit, we
yeah.
Do it.
We do it. Yeah.
I mean, look sure. At what, like, DocuSign. DocuSign's changed our industry big
time. Oh, my God. Yeah. Because my grandma was a real estate agent for, she still is, but she still handwrites everything. And, like, so whenever.
God bless that woman.
Yeah. So, like, when
did she
when you
letters?
Want, you know, she'll drive over to your house. And, yeah.
I'll like, be honest. COVID completely helped our industry in terms of automation. Greatly.
Because it forced it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Digital, like DocuSign for our loan disclosure. I mean, I used to have to schedule times, have people come in, sit down, and go through these disclosures in person with these people. Now, we just send them a link. They click in. It's all right there in front of them, and we can set up a Zoom call or a phone call to review all of it, and it takes 30 minutes, where before you got people driving in, takes hours out of your day. It's just, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, theory of evolution. It's just instead of being human beings, it's technology and the workforce.
When these things were happening, is there ever a fear of being odd? Is there ever a fear of you being replaced by this tool? No. Did it amplify your ability to do your job?
Made it easier for me to do more.
Exactly. Yes. And that's the thing we were talking about. So let me end this topic, and then I want to get into the productivity, why I think AI revolution is fundamentally going to change how we work for the better. When I noticed that all of these things were getting automated, job and all my peers were very excited about this, I looked at it as a detriment. I was like, listen, I know where this leads and very task that should not be. And it's not that I ever have financial analysts or something. I won't have 10, 2. I don't want to be there making that decision. I don't want to be here because I don't want the false fallacy. Sorry, not false fallacy, but the falsehood that like I'm somehow smarter or productive or anything like my peers. As anyone knows in corporate America, number one metric for whether or not you get a job by data is whether or not your employer would have a beard.
Really?
It's not your intellect. It's not your resume. It's your interview. Like, oh, I vibe with this guy, right? Or this girl's hot. That's the number two. The attractiveness of a female coworker.
Okay.
Fun fact on that. Now, is that for all of corporate America? Like if you go to SpaceX and like an engineer, I doubt these are the factors. Yes. But if you're like, you know, this is administration, you got 100 interviews, like, yeah, you're going to notice, like, the guy that was cool and the hot girl.
Sure.
Human nature, whatever, better and worse. So I told myself, I was developing a skill set of kind of automating my job on the side that I just wasn't telling. So, like, I was learning Visual Basic, I was learning Power Pivot, I was learning Power BI. I was essentially taking all of our main tasks and kind of hyper-focusing on automation, but internally. And in that pursuit, I developed a skill set. I thought, I needed to do this for someone else, I could. It was finally one, like, I don't want to say that it was one moment that caused me to quit. It was like death by 1,000 paper cuts. Constantly work, raises every year were getting less, the bonuses were getting less, even though financially we were doing great. I was like, this is insane. I finally had that breaking point where I was like, you know what? On a team meeting, I go, I'm done, guys. Go fuck yourself. I hung up the team's call. Boss calls me. He's like, what do you mean? I was like, here's my 2 weeks. Boss's boss called me, tried to like, I've never told this story, but I'm going to say it. My boss's boss called me like immediately after he did. And he was like, hey, totally understand that you're like not happy with the company and all that. I'll tell you what, give us 2 months because my portfolio went from $80 million a quarter to $200 million. So me just leaving like this, they were fucked. And I knew that. But I did that as like a ploy, like, hey, if I'm valued, if I'm worth it, you show fucking me. Make mm. it work. It wasn't money. It wasn't money. It's everything else. Responsibility, acknowledgement, all these other things. I don't give a fuck. There's no such thing as a bad job, only bad salaries. I was getting paid well for what I was doing. Problem was, if you're going to do all these extra things, I need 50K more. And that was my number. They weren't willing to do that. So, okay, cool. He called me and was trying to be like, it would be a shame after 4 years, this is how you our relationship together. If you ever wanted to come back, the company's name was Amdocs. If you ever wanted to come back, I don't know if we would take you back. And I remember I was like sitting on the front porch. And I mean, I was sweating with these guys. I remember I quit my job essentially. Yeah. In my 2 weeks, I don't have another job. And I'm also in my head thinking, I'm not going to work in finance anymore. I'm going for information systems or data analytics or something. Go into my living room, tell my wife, hey, just quit my job. I don't have another job lined up. She was pregnant at the time. I have about 8 months of like cash I could have where I'd have to start like a portfolio. But I'll make it work. My wife takes her headphones off. She was on a Teams call. She goes, I trust you. Puts her headphones back on and starts her meeting.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
I'm sitting on my porch and phone calls start coming in. Obviously, my coworker texts me like, dude, are you fucking great? Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know,
fuck
like,
yeah, dude.
Exactly. You said everybody quits. Everybody quits that way. Everybody like, I want to be able to quit that way. Mic drop.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I had to be ready to burn that bridge. And yeah. By the way, that bridge is burned. It's something I have on my resume.
But I think it's bullshit. Like what you were saying that the boss's boss called and the way that he, like, that's manipulative as fuck.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's fucked up.
It rubbed me the wrong way so bad that I told him. I said, I'm not going to say his name. I said, I know that every 3 months to 6 months he comes to St. Louis, the Chesterfield headquarters. I told him, I said, if I ever see you, never let me see you in St. Louis again. I will throw my life away and yours. Never let me see you in public. Now, 7 year old,
yeah,
32 now,
32 year old, 5 years. Yeah.
And I like to think that he remembers that. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like I said off the record, I immediately brushed up my resume, changed it. A common mistake people make is they only have one resume. I have five. And I have five resumes because there's different skill sets that I would use different positions. I'm not going to use my finance resume for something in information systems. I wouldn't use that for something in data analytics. I wouldn't use that for something in sales. I wouldn't use that for have you. So I very first thing I did was I took my resume and I kind of created four resumes out of it. Skill sets, made it one page, simple and clean, and visually. Within a week, I had interviewed twice and got a job. I had to do an assessment test because I didn't have any sort of credentials.
For information system?
And to their credit, that's what I would have done too. Because right. Like I'm on this interview and I'm talking shop with these other technical and sounds like I know what I'm doing. They want to make sure that I do. So they make me take like this extenuous Excel course, not test, like 150 questions of basic Excel shit. Like anybody can. If you did like 2 years on Excel, you pass this. Tough part was more Python, Visual Basic. That coding language was like, oh shit, you know what I mean? Anyway, I pass it, I do well. And it was also kind of affirming to me because I had never done like any sort of certification or anything. I just knew that I could do this for my work. I wasn't necessarily sure if I could do this for someone else. So passing that assessment was kind of like, fuck yeah, I do belong. I can do this. And then I got the job within a week. And I was telling you off the record, I never missed a paycheck. I started my next job. So like I ended my job on a Friday, started that job on a Monday. Then by the time my previous check would hit, that's when the pay period started. And then I got my next check after that. Never even missed a check. And I remember thinking, fun fact too, I got a 5K bump. And I was willing to accept anything because I just wanted to get my foot in the door. Mm. 6 months later, the company gets bought out. Then I get another job, like 60K. I mean, substantially changed my life. Yeah. Okay. But that, I'm forever grateful to the company Intellier, even though Vizient bought them out, because they are the reason they took a shot with me. They are the reason I'm at where I'm at today. Because had they never gotten me that job, I don't know. Like, I could have easily been a difference between a genius and an idiot is success. So shout out to Intellier. I know you don't exist anymore. but I hope those people, I hope Brad, forget his last name, forgive me. Brad, I hope you're doing well in life. Thank you for taking a shot on me.
Yeah. Shout out to Brad.
To piggyback that off of automation.
Yeah, I want to get back to the AI.
The way we look at artificial intelligence should be likening to, you know, a hammer or a sickle, whether you're a harvester or a constructor. AI in the hands of intellectual people can kind of raise the prosperity of all. AI in the hands of less intellectual people can raise the prosperity of themselves. Specifically, what we were talking about with DocuSign, the automation of a lot of these, making the physical realm digital. It happens when you take digital actions and you automate that as well. It really frees you up to do everything else that AI cannot do. If you look at the graph, human ingenuity, human history, the biggest blip in terms of productivity, quality of life for all humanity was during ancient Roman. When Rome was in its ascension, its prosperity and its technological advancements at the time, just something as simple as like an aqueduct, bring water to a city, right? It seems so simple now. Back then, that was like mind-blowing technology that could really create, just having something as like simple as running water, the amount of disease and infestations that you're going to prevent, so the amount of people that can now live amongst one another is now exponentially higher. And what do we know about humanity when they start to congregate together? They have more time. What they do with that time? They start to think. They do what they think. Create shit. Create shit. They create tools or something to like make their lives more prosperous. Why am I washing this by hand? Why don't we create something that can wash this for us, maybe with like the force of the river? Oh, we can harness other forms of energy and have that work with us. This is what you get when you're no longer worried about survival. And now you have a little bit of free time to start thinking about thriving. Oh, hey, my belly's full. And that mountain lion isn't trying to kill me. Put a roof over it. Let's start settling down. Let's start, you know, really establishing some sort of like agricultural base to really create the society. Previous to that, the level of growth of humanity was pretty much stagnant. Ancient Rome happened. You see like this little blip, about a 5% increase. When the Industrial Revolution happened, it was about an 8,000x. Increase in terms of productivity exponentially. Why? The advancements of machinery and the factory and the congregation of people, labor source, greatly made it available for everyday people to have goods that would have just not been available to them before. With that comes the economics, prosperity, capitalism. I'm making a product that helped me make that product, so I gave you a salary. You take that salary, you buy other products that maybe someone else is making of similar ilk, maybe different industries, right? You might buy a car, you might buy beard oil or the premium
hand wraps,
yeah, hand rolling papers, whatever it is, right? It was an exponential growth to not just America, humanity, because as so does the U.S., so does everybody else. The AI revolution, to put this on like something that you can quantify. And I said this to you, the way we look at work within our lifetime, because our generation, I was a 92. I remember what it was like to not have internet, had internet. I remember what it was like to, you know, have a rotary phone when I was like 6 years old, like 9, 8. Then I remember what it was like to have like a digital, but like a cord phone in the house. And I remember when that cord was away and I was like, oh, I can just call people and like walk to my room. Then I remember what it was like to like not even have a house phone and have a cell phone exclusively. How that went with internet too. I remember when we first got a home PC and then when we got to the PC in our like bedroom, you know what I mean? The advancement of technology for our generation is unlike any other generation ever before in human history.
It's insane.
It's beautiful.
I mean, just to think of like the iPhone came out in 2007. It's 2024.
I was a freshman in high school.
Yeah.
That was my sophomore year of college.
I remember my my cousin's boyfriend, now husband, had he had the very first iPhone. I remember like he had it. It was like Christmas or Thanksgiving or something. We're all just like, oh, you know, yeah. Like
give you another one. MySpace came out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
MySpace.
Now the original, like.
That's the original. So
yeah. Media, yeah. And then, I mean, well, yeah. But then like it took time to like kind of keep up. But, like by 506, it starts picking up steam. First iteration isn't always the best.
Facebook. Yeah. Facebook. I remember Facebook came out. I think we were in seventh grade.
Yeah. Like it was around the time of the iPhone.
Yeah.
Because I specifically remember people getting the iPhone and then always being like, are you on Facebook?
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is like MySpace. I remember thinking like, oh, this is like MySpace, but like more can't do as much shit, you know? Can't put change the background and put the song on when you show up and you don't have to rank your friends.
I'm mad at this person. Yeah. You're not my top five.
Yeah, you're not my top five.
Or it's like, I was number four yesterday. Yeah. What happened? Now I'm number five. Yeah, John is ahead of me. Yeah. Fuck John.
Yeah, fuck John. You guys hang out one weekend and I get the bump.
Kids will never remember Tom. All he wanted to do was be your friend.
Right.
I joke with my buddies all the time. Like, we need to bring MySpace back. Yeah. You remember? That was just such a superior product.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was cool because you could, like, I loved that you could, like, customize your page and, like, have, like, song playing when you got, you know, I was like, I thought that shit was so cool.
I think I had one, but I've gotten on it, like, once because when I, so let's see, 2006, that's when I graduated high school and got my laptop for college and had my college email. That was the only way to get into Facebook.
Oh, that's right.
You had to have a college email, and they had just brought Missouri State on to the platform.
That's back when it was
the Facebook. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And I just remember getting on there and just like, just all the girls, just
everyone
that had Missouri State that was a female was like, add.
And here Pat is with kids.
Yeah.
Shocker. No, but I think there's no coincidence that with the advent or with the invention of a computing capability handheld that you have in your pocket, and also the advancements of all these other softwares go hand in hand. The iPhone in a lot of ways is the hardware that facilitates a lot of the software that we use. Social media would not exist in the capacity or capabilities that it does today. Steve Jobs and Apple did not create the iPhone. Now, the argument could be made that if he didn't do it, someone else would have. Duly noted, he was. So in the annals of human history, welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the similar sense that you look at how social media can make use of your cell phone capabilities, that's how you need to look at AI, but with everything. So AI is now your iPhone. What could possibly stem? First got that iPhone, did you think to yourself that you would be surfing the web the same way you do on a PC? Did you think that you would be on social media platforms, doom scrolling for like dopamine? Did you think that your data would ever be sold? Right? There's good and bad. That's AI. We don't know to what capacity it will extend and further the quality of our lives, but we simultaneously don't know to what extent it will also create sort of detriments or hurdles. The question we have to ask ourselves is that worth? I can make the argument. Social media is like a net negative to society. Yet here we are on a podcast having the discussion of how that is so. I think there's beauty to that. There's no such thing as like 100% good, 100% bad.
Right.
We just need to be very... My biggest fear is lack of proper education tool. Because what's happening, and you see it already, do you know how your phone works, components in it, software updates, or when something goes from iOS 18 to 18.1, do you read the EULA, read the new updated terms of services to understand, or the patch notes to understand the difference? Don't.
Oh.
Don't worry. 98% of people on the planet don't. They don't even know, like, they don't have the technical literacy to even understand if they did.
If I read that, I don't think I'd retain it.
Right. There's nothing good or bad about that. It just is. Okay. Not if you started talking to me about automobiles, I wouldn't, you know, I put gas in my car. I know it runs, right? I know I got to keep the tire pressure up. That's about all I know, right?
Get my oil changed.
Yeah, yeah. But I still, I get to benefit from the advancement of technology with automobiles. So I don't want to diminish anybody or make anybody feel stupid if they're like, oh, you don't know how your phone works. That's not the point. But the problem is it's an exponential gap. That delta between ignorance and stupidity is going to become so vast that to get from stupid to ignorant, okay, because those are two different things. Stupid is like choosing to be ignorant. While ignorant is, I don't know anything. I'm trying. Is going to be so hard that the general populace will not use AI or understand how it's working. Forgive me. It's not that they won't use AI. They won't understand how AI is being used. They're just benefiting. And that's where you have this schism in humanity seen before. That can be ripe for abuse. And my fear is, specifically regarding legislation, Congress, usually Congress is reactive, not proactive. and we are not operating in a bubble. I have gone back and forth on this, but at this point in time, I am for unfettered development and use of artificial intelligence, up to and including general artificial intelligence. Why? Do I think that it's possibly dangerous? Absolutely. But is anybody else stopping? No. And as we know with technology, it's exponential. And AI specifically provides a nuance that has been uncharacterized before. If you don't invent the iPhone, okay, you don't really care. Because then that's somewhere. You can take that blueprint. You can modify it however you want. And you can create a direct competitor, okay? I mean, that's literally what Android did.
Sure.
I would make the argument that they even did it better. Their software has something to be desired for, but in terms of hardware, they have a better product than iPhones. However, you can use that technology to then springboard yourself to an equal plane, and then you can compete. I'm all for that. AI is not that, especially general artificial intelligence. It's Sun Tzu's The Art of War. Who strikes first wins in the purest form. Whoever gets to general AI first will have a forever advantage by virtue of general artificial intelligence being able to exponentially grow upon its own learning language models, upon data that it has at its reservoir. And who produces more data? China and America. No offense to Russia. Look, China and America. China by its numbers, America because of its ingenuity and creativity. We lead the world in shit.
Sure.
We produce the most shit
right.
that people consume. China has the most people that can consume shit. Symbiotic, whether we like it or not. But the reason I say that we should have unfettered is if we, in our ignorance, try to inhibit this foundling technology that could then also be, because we're not operating in isolation, India, China, Russia, the fact that we do open source AI is fucking insane to me. It's insane to me. Because that thing that I was talking about earlier where like someone could take something from you and then build upon it, that is true even with AI up until general AI. Once it's up and running on its own, its compute is so vastly superior to anything humankind has ever made before. Within the first minute, you're years ahead. So why we would give that infrastructure up willingly is beyond insane to me. And that's actually maybe one thing that, like, I think Elon Musk is truly a genius of a man. But his stance on this is wild to me. It's really wild to me. Like, maybe it's like a...
Because he's not for it? He's not...
He is for open source AI. But I think it's in honestly.
So, explain the difference between open source and general.
So, okay. So, general AI and open source AI is actually the same thing.
Okay.
General artificial intelligence is an artificial intelligence that can operate and grow on its own. It learns on its own. It's given its own framework. Yeah. Autonomy.
Yeah.
True autonomy. Open source is just a description of how you handle your data. So the code that they're generating for this general artificial intelligence is open source, meaning you, Pat, at any moment, can go into the hard drives, or not hard drives, I'm sure they have like some sort of shared. Mm-hmm. Or give anybody access, or the GitHub repository, or whatever it is that they're using. Control C, Control V onto whatever you're using, and now you are up to date with everything they have. I'm very much simplifying this, and anybody who's really technically savvy, more into general artificial intelligence, can probably run circles around me. The way open source code works is universal. Like the work that I do is not in artificial intelligence, but I could have my code be open source, and then anybody can take it and use it for their company. Why would I not do that? Because that's valuable to me. The same reason I would not give that up to anybody else, because that was my hard work to formulate this logic to kind of congregate all this data together. Why the fuck would you ever do that with AI, especially with competitors? Only logic that I can think is, and there is some merit to this, is that once you get general artificial intelligence, you will basically supplement humanity, and you will get to a point where no longer matter, we'll get to a point where abundance will be so prevalent that like poverty will be a choice amongst humans, not necessarily birthright. I mean, if you have to the point, if you combine software, you combine the robotics of SpaceX, Tesla, with artificial intelligence of Sam Altman's OpenAI, you will essentially create a universal 24/7 workforce, produce everything over the course of time. Maybe not initially, but how long until they 3D print? How long until they 3D print cars? How long until you no longer need?
You're starting to see the 3D printing on houses
already.
Dude, yeah.
Without even AI. Yeah. Imagine when you have that.
Yeah.
And that's why I say within 20 years. Why 20? Why not 15? Why not 25? 20 because you're still in a nascent market for this. And if U.S. government gets involved and starts to regulate U.S. industry and the rest of the world is not, that will actually bring back the rest of the world. Because if you think that China or Russia spearhead AI technology, you're out of your mind. Best and brightest are here in America. God bless. We start to hamstring ourselves. Give them a fighting shot. I don't like that. So I think 20 years because of bureaucracy. Thank God for the inefficiency of Congress. Thank God for the inefficiency of government. Because it's entirely possible this gets done beforehand. And once the toothpaste is out of the tube, toothpaste out of it. Good luck.
Genie's out of the bottle.
Yeah. It's the same thing with guns, right? Second Amendment. Like,
yeah.
Good luck trying to get all those guns back.
Yeah. We have more guns than people here.
Good luck with AI. But I wanna go back to the Elon Musk OpenAI. It's entirely possible one of the outcomes of this is prosperity so vast, so immense, the basic needs for humans go away. Everyone can have a house wherever the fuck they want because you're not going to be supplemented to be in a city because you're not going to be working. And everyone will have anything they could possibly want in terms of like food and amenities because the cost for the labor to acquire these things will be so substantially low to compare to where they are now that, like I said earlier, poverty will be a choice. We are choosing to make someone live in poverty because we have such abundance. Flip side of that, humanity is a flawed creature. And I think that when you have people in hunt for power, cannot necessarily trust every actor in the field, so to speak. And where I can understand why open AI is a thing or open source coding is a thing, I don't like the idea that anybody at any time can get on the same footprint as Sam Altman.
Yeah, that's
Elon
crazy.
Musk,
I didn't know that. And I'm pretty ignorant to this.
Well, how do you think all these language learning models came out at the same time? How do you think like ChatGPT comes out and then Facebook has theirs? And it's
yeah,
because they're all
it's
using
on Google,
the same shit.
It's on, yeah, it's everywhere.
If you don't think that's happening in China and Russia and everywhere else,
why
delusional.
Wouldn't it? Yeah, happening here. But thinking about when...
Sorry, I went down a rabbit hole.
No,
forgive me.
But it's got me thinking like, well, if everything is automated and, you know, and we don't have to work, it's like, I feel like humans just have a general like desire to produce and to create things and to do things. So it's like, what if all of your needs are met, like what's our purpose? Yeah, what are you doing?
That
you know,
is,
like, what are you doing with your days?
That's the question. We as humans,
you're being trained to fight in the military to protect whatever.
No, because if you think we're gonna
the robots,
oh, that's true, robots. Yeah.
Look at Ukraine, Russia now. You think it's? Don't get me wrong. I want to be careful how I say this. There are lives lost, human lives, and I'm not saying that that should be under-reported, treated with disrespect. I think it's a travesty. Personally. However, this war between Ukraine and Russia, some say proxy war, Russia, has shown us the true evolution of warfare in our time. It is the majority of people are not dying to ammunition, artillery. Majority of people are dying to drones.
Yeah, like they're most of it is, from my understanding, these like really cheap, like $80 or $100 drones that they essentially attach a grenade to, and they just fly them into buildings. Which is crazy, because that's like, you think of like all this, the like, as far as technology can go and how smart and how like advanced shit can get, they're just, you buying the cheapest drone that you can buy from, you know, Best Buy, and essentially just attaching a grenade to it
and flying it into wherever
they want it to be.
Well, one of the things that I left off about our technological advancement, our productive capabilities throughout human history, is actually our propensity to cause death exponentially increases with our advancement.
Shit, they're not. Yeah, they wouldn't even need the drones. It's eventually, just put the. They're gonna get so fine tuned with the weapons and iron bombs that they build it right into the bomb, and just control the bomb right into the.
You don't need explosives. Yeah. What is the limiting factor between biology and technology? What can happen to a computer that renders that hardware a virus? Sort of technological software inhibitor. Biology is just
chemical warfare, dude. That shit scares the fuck out of me.
So if you really wanted to, and I don't want to get like too dark in this, but regarding artificial intelligence, regarding the advancements of technology, regarding the productivity, the exponential of humanity, this is why I go back to my, like, I would much rather live in a world where the U.S. is leading, not because of our leaders, because our leaders are just as susceptible to stupidity as anybody else, because of our form of government, because we have checks and balances, because at the end of the day, the people decide. Look at this last election, right? Over anybody else. Whenever people tell me that, like, oh, you know, we're in direct confrontation with, like, China, Russia, and all these other people. No, we're not. It's a mile run, guys. It's not a sprint. In your form of government, supplement anybody else over the course of time because it works. You can't have authority. You can't have dictatorship. You can't have a monarchy over the course of time because that leads to civil unrest. We've seen it time and time again. Those that don't know their history are doomed to repeat. And whenever people tell me, like, China's our number one adversary, Russia's our number one adversary, you have to do it in the context of, like, grander vision. Our number one adversary in terms of, because we consume everything. Like I said, they may produce low-end goods. We consume those low-end goods. And in a lot of ways, globalization has done its job. The reason why we're still alive today and we are not in some nuclear winter is because of the global markets. Because of capitalism, because of greed. That's why I say out of all the seven deadly sins, greed is the one that's kept humanity alive. If we did not have globalization, if the Iron Curtain had not fallen, if we didn't have JFK when we had JFK, we would not be here today. 100%. That's neither good nor bad. Just simply is. Understand it, occupy it, go with it.
Did you ever see that, speaking of JFK, like, and speaking of not being here, did you ever see that show's 1969.
Yeah, with James Franco.
Yeah, with James Franco.
Good one, man. No. It's a good show.
Oh, man. So I forget what it's on. It might be on Prime. Is it Prime or HBO?
I think it's HBO.
But anyway, basically goes in and this guy discovers a wormhole and falls back into 1969 or whenever JFK was assassinated.
69 or 68.
Something like that.
Did he stop the bullet?
So what happened? Well,
that's like the whole idea.
That's the whole idea.
He's gonna go back and save or stop. Stop. What's his name?
So like anytime he dies in Lee Harvey.
Lee Harvey. I wanted to say John Wilkes Booth, but I was like, I know that's not right.
That's Abe.
I was like, I know that's not right.
So
it's like I wanted to say that.
So essentially,
four scores and seven sacks ago.
Yeah. So essentially, like anytime that he dies in this alternate universe, he comes back to
present.
And then he goes and he falls back, and then he finds the wormhole and falls back in. And every time he goes back, he's trying something new to save JFK. And finally he does, and then he dies, and he comes back to the real world, and it's just fucking chaos. The world's ending. All of this stuff is ending. It's a real interesting thing, and just kind of reminded me of what you were saying. Like, if we didn't have JFK at that time, and what happened, where we would be at today, and that's a show that kind of gives a glimpse of what something like that might happen. So
yeah, I mean, even that statement that I made is kind of loaded because I don't know.
Right. I get what you're saying, but it's just...
Yeah, but...
Start getting into, like, science fiction, or not even science fiction, but, like, science, and it's, like, alternative timelines, and what you mean by that.
Right. Yeah.
All I know is, when you look back at human history, the Cold War, Revolutionary War, both World Wars were so monumental to the trajectory of humanity.
Oh, right. Just think if German would have won. Like, World War II. Like, or where would we... Like, what the fuck?
Total annihilation, because communism doesn't work.
Oh,
that's the other thing. It's like, it goes back to that center comment that I made of, like, if America ever gets to the point where it doesn't have hegemony, at least in this hemisphere or the world, it'll be by choice. Not because China and Russia is growing. It's because we allowed it. China and Russia, in a lot of ways, present to us an alternative America. What can happen if we don't have checks and balances, but we have productive capabilities, we have the wealth, we have the capitalistic endeavors, but we kind of cap it with hierarchy and aristocracy? we should look to them as examples of what America could be. Yeah. And not necessarily as competitors, because they're not competitors. I don't care what anybody says. The economics of America, the GDP growth, especially now that Trump's in office, I'm not going to get political about, like, you know, the red versus blue. I really don't give a shit about that. But if they go about two things, if they deregulate and they go towards a pay-for-play, not pay-for-play, if they start making every actor in NATO pay their fair share, you start to do mild tariffs, not egregious ones, you are then going to start showing other countries the value of the American market. And more specifically, it's ingenuity. We throttle ourselves constantly to the point that no other country does this. We tell our industries, we tell our best and brightest, no, you can't do that, you can't do this. And duly noted, it's been used against them prior in terms of, like,
what are some examples of that?
The steel industry back in the Industrial Revolution. You know what I mean? You had J.D. Rockefeller, you had J.P. Morgan, you had guys that really understood the integration between financial institutions and the productive capabilities of them. They were the first ones, I would say, and there are a slew of other people, but those two people individually were some of the people that understood that money, to a certain point, is now power. Now I have power. Power. J.P. Morgan is who funded the government. I believe it was. I'm gonna mess up the date. Historians, please correct me. But there was a year where the President of the United States went to J.P. Morgan, basically issued U.S. Treasury bonds to him at a loss for J.P. Morgan for essentially institutional power carrying over, and J.P. Morgan funded the U.S. government for a period of time. That is human history. That's U.S. history. Forgive me. Is that good or bad? I would rather J.P. Morgan own it than China.
Yeah.
Right.
$35 trillion, $36 trillion of debt. I'm kind of going all over the place because, forgive me, but, like, so many of these things are intertwined with one another. The capital markets that we've kind of grown globalism towards, like, to make, you know, we don't want to make things. We'll let China make things and we'll consume things, but we'll still make certain things. And Russia is a player because of essentially just their production of energy. Without Russia, China can't exist. Full tilt. The number one consumer of energy in the world is China. Their number one importer of energy is Russia. That's the only reason why Russia is a major player, other than its nuclear arsenal. But even that is, like, to be debated what the actual number are. Because if you're not keeping up with the technologies of the time, how many of those are inert, how many of those are no longer actually usable? Granted, it's overkill. You don't need that many. Mm-hmm. You need 100 nukes, you're good.
You're good.
Humanity's done. Right? So forgive me. But without the greed of man, he would have already imploded, which is the great irony of artificial intelligence, because it is the greed of man that would cause it to go awry. But you could also make that argument prior. The problem with history is, don't know it, you can be doomed to repeat it. But if you do know it, you may make the error of thinking that what's happened before will happen again. And that's not necessarily the case either, but every financial bubble since two. So I live in a world where there are variables within my control. That's what I focus on. But I'm also focused on the variables out of my control, because they will navigate the playing field in which I operate my sport. My sport now is business. It's not necessarily fighting. But there are decisions made outside of my control that will affect the rules, right? Imagine you're playing hockey, and halfway through the game, they tell you, okay, now everybody gets an extra man. That might seem like a little, but they didn't change the size of the rink. They didn't change.
Chaos.
It's chaos. It's too many people, right? So, like, now you're a little bit more
constricted.
There's less options for certain things. Defense is easier. Offense might be harder, or vice versa. I'm not, like, a hockey connoisseur.
No, you're absolutely right.
That is your life, and you don't even know it. There are constantly decisions being made, both within our realm, our purview, the U.S. Congress, executive, judicial, legislative branches, and geopolitically, globally. We are constantly trying to compete amongst one another in our own markets, and we are competing globally. And this is the rub that I feel like a lot of people kind of forget whenever they're talking about, like, legislation, taxing the rich and all this other shit, it sounds good until you get to step two, step three, step four. And then you realize that you're not in isolation, that the rest of the world does not operate under the same rules that we do. They don't value life the way we do. And when I say we, I mean the U.S. populace, not Congress.
Yeah.
Ask anybody in politics. They don't value life any more than an Asian aristocrat or Eurasian Peninsula aristocrat. It's all the same. I have optimism for the trajectory of humanity based on the productive capabilities. We fight over power, not resources. Like I said, already today, poverty is a choice. With everyone, with the exception of like India and maybe some others, because India has over a billion population. That's too much.
Yeah.
India is a case example of why you don't want unfettered immigration.
Something we were talking about. Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
And forgive me, because I feel like I'm kind of hogging this conversation.
No, you're killing it.
Well, this is the shit that runs it through my head.
I know. I just love letting you go. This is great.
Yeah, you probably don't get to do this on yours. You're trying to get the other person to do that.
Yeah, but the reason I did the podcast was because I did it when I originally was going to start the podcast. This is what it was going to be, monologuing.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought to myself, like, I can tell you high level. I can get into the weeds on some things, but I'm not exceptionally gifted at any of these one topics. I am not the one that should be telling this. Other people should. I'm a consumer of knowledge, a regurgitator of some, the ones where I feel comfortable saying, talking about. And the other thing I didn't want to do is, I'm talking from my own thoughts. That's going to get isolated very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did notice was when I sat people down, I believe, and I could be wrong when I say this, but people are Venn diagrams. You come from a different world than I do. You come from a different world than I do. When we have conversations, we seem to have these moments where we kind of connect.
100%.
My comment about hockey. Comment about the conversations we were having beforehand. That Venn diagram is, in my opinion, the calculation for a podcast.
Oh, absolutely.
Take two separate people, talk about the differences, combine on the things that we have alike, find the similarities. That is literally, like, if you extrapolate that, that's how societies can stay intact. People realize that Venn diagram is actually more share, less separate. And we're actually not different. The one thing that I enjoy about a podcast, and what you guys have allowed me today, is a prime example of that. You bring guests on to have a conversation. Sometimes you might spend 60 minutes fucking listening.
Yeah. 100%. Absolutely. That's what we always say, because, you know, we do two episodes a week, and we do one with a guest and one with just him and I. And with, you know, our buddy Murph, who cuts up and produces and does all the stuff.
Shout out Murph.
Yeah, shout out to Murph.
The unsung hero.
The unsung hero of the podcast. He used to be sitting right there and have a mic in front of him, but and so he would kind of be more part of the show than he is now. But, you know, there's times where, because he'll send us, you know, the clips for us to post on social media, and I'd be like, well, you know, there wasn't as much, you didn't say as much in this one, or like,
but that's fine,
but it's totally fine, you know, like, because it's like, that's the whole point of a guest, and that's kind of one of the nice parts about
spotlight,
yeah,
letting
exactly, because then we get another episode, which we're gonna do about an hour from now, which is him and I, and we're talking the whole time, so it's don't ever feel like you're hogging
which do you prefer, the one with the guests or the one between yourselves?
I love having the guests here. I really do. Because it's like, I feel like I'm getting in it. I feel like I get an education.
Same. You're getting to learn about somebody that you may not know about. I mean, a lot of the guests that we've had on have been people that Zach has known and that I'm getting to know through sitting across from, just like this. And, you know, it's been very eye-opening just to see how people think and how, like, everybody's different, but same at the same time. And it's just been... Yeah, it's been eye-opening, and it's been a lot of fun just hearing people's stories and letting them talk.
Do you think that everyone is inherently interesting?
No. No, I mean, I feel like what's interesting to you is not necessarily always going to be what's interesting to me. Like, I feel like that's a very subjective question, like, to that person.
Let me better ask my question. Do you think everyone has a story that they can tell that's interesting?
Yeah, some of our favorite episodes is where I've said very little.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, I can think of, you know, we had a guy on that literally rollerbladed across America from Venice Beach to Times Square. Like, that was, I think that was the episode where Pat and I said, like, the least.
Yeah.
We just
sat there and let him tell a story.
It was fucking crazy.
I asked my one thing, and that was that.
Really. Yeah. I mean, we literally were like,
value add.
Yeah. We were like, literally just like asking one or two random questions. Like, so wait, what did you do for me? And then he would go for like 20, 30 minutes, and then, all right.
Just
kind of
like
one more question.
Just leading things, just to kind of keep him, just let him roll, because it was such a great story.
Yeah.
So,
Are you surprised at how much you've grown at this from episode 1 to 1?
Oh, absolutely.
I watched your episode 100, and I loved what you did.
Thank you.
How you made episode 100 about, like, your favorite moments of all the guests that you just had.
Yeah.
I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Forgive me. I want to be completely transparent. Of your 100 episodes, I think I've listened to probably, like, 13 or 14. Granted, I didn't know about your podcast until about episode 56. But I will say that I enjoy your approach immensely.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Episode 56? I'm just curious.
Which one was Woody?
It was probably mid-50s. Yeah. It had to be around then.
56 might not be the right number, but because I had Woody as a friend. And by the way, I didn't have Instagram at the time. I was still forming the podcast. So I didn't create the podcast Instagram yet.
Dude, your Instagram's great.
It's just memes.
That's all it is. I love it.
I gotta get the dark urges away.
I got like four people that I follow that literally just like they just post memes. You're one of them. And you guys, you'll post something and then like I send it to all my friends. You know?
Oh God, I hope not. You're gonna lose friends.
Yeah.
I watched that episode with Woody and I enjoyed it because like Woody, not a lot of people know Woody, but Woody's got a story.
He's got stories for days.
And that's the thing. A lot of people don't know Woody. He's got stories.
Oh, so good.
And that's isolated to the perspective that I have on Woody because I know Woody. Everyone has a story. It is sometimes shielded or guarded, perhaps buried. Hmm. If we do our job right, everybody has a story that's intriguing or educating, what have you. It might not be in a field of joy. And I'm sure you guys consume podcasts, but like, I went from watching every episode of JRE to watching only, I read the description, partially because of time, but also because of what I'm interested in. Sometimes I get thrown a curveball, like the JRE with like the lady with the honey,
The bees, yeah.
Great. I watched all of that. I was like, this is intriguing, right?
A hot chick that does bees, that makes honey, and yeah.
You don't say. I left that part out.
I mean, come on.
As a married man, I would never say that.
I mean, come on. I mean, let's be real.
But also with like my limited amount of time, I have to really pick and choose what I consume. So when I tell you guys that I consume your podcast, that is like the highest praise I can give.
We appreciate that.
I love your podcast.
Thank you. I love yours as well. And you know, being a guest on it, it was so cool to go in and just see how someone else does it. Because I've been on, other than our own, I think I've been on yours and like two others. But like I feel like yours made me really realize, oh wow, like I do mine in my basement. You have a nice like.
Studio.
You have a nice studio. Like, I'm like, oh man, maybe we need to get a studio. And I was just like all these things.
I think it's different strokes for different folks. And I presented to you, I remember we had a conversation beforehand. It's like, I did certain things because of certain reasons. I knew when I planned mine, it was always for scope growth or just growth in general. Like the reason why we did VMix and not OBS was because if I ever wanted to get to a point where
VMix and what's OBS?
Talk about that. It's the operating system that I use to record everything. Right?
Okay.
I don't want to give too much of like how the sausage is made, so to speak. But let's just say two operating systems that do the same thing, vastly in different ways. VMix is $1,000 license. OBS is free. Why did I choose VMix? I could have easily used OBS and still used OBS to this day. Problem is, VMix allows me the opportunity, if I get the right guest at the right time, jump on the opportunity for a simulcast webcast where like someone could be Demetrius Johnson way of like, you're on a webcam, I'm on a webcam, but I'm still in my studio. And the reason I did VMix is because it has the ability to that record that and in 1080. Spent $1,000 on that before we even did our first episode, just in case. And I want to say this, but I also do not want to make it sound like anybody else did it wrong. Everybody will do their things their way for what works for them. That's how it is. When I set out to do the podcast, I went to Matt and said, listen, my budget, I'm way over that fucking budget. This is what I want to do. And I'm very happy with how it turned out. And our options for what we want to do later on are immense. But I also don't want to fall into this trap. What got you in is no one. That's why I like it. Because I'm going to say something that's going to sound like an insult. It's actually, how hard is it when you have a very awesome guest, very conversation, and it gets 7 minutes?
Yeah.
fucking sucks.
Sucks, dude. Oh, we've had a couple of those. Yeah. I was like, fuck, this was like one of my favorite episodes. Yeah. I
thought
like,
it was going to be a banger.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, that one's going to hit.
And then the ones
sure.
that you're like, huh, that one got the most views.
Yeah, all the time. Surprised.
I'm realizing that what I find interesting is not what everyone else finds interesting. Yeah. All I can do is try to bring that interest out and let the market decide. Just because I think a guest is amazing. Listen, I think I had a great rant.
Yeah,
maybe just turned it off after minute five. You know what I mean? We don't fucking
for sure. Yeah,
but the reason I respect you guys so much is the hustle. How hard was it to get to episode 10, episode 50? Now you're at episode 100. What is the goal of the podcast? What is the goal of this endeavor that you guys are spending time doing? Because this is what 2.5-3 hours a week that you guys are spending, more or less.
Yeah. We said all the time, we look forward to sitting down with people every week, because it's like, how often do we really sit down, have phones off, sit here and just like, actually, I feel like I learned something with every guest. And I feel like I've gotten better at just having conversations, which is just helps me in my job and just in life in general. You know, that's been one of the things that I feel like I've noticed the most.
How much value is the network?
It's
incredible.
For sure.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you look at all the, you know, the social media and all the other stuff that the podcast has created.
Professionalism.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's building a brand.
Bro, own it. You're doing this shit.
Yeah.
It's fucking hard.
I love our studio. I love this shit. It's personal. It's personalized to us. I mean, yeah, it's not a fancy studio by any means, but we created it. We built it. It's got everything in here that represents us, and it's relaxing. I think it's just a relaxing environment that can breed a good conversation.
I felt safe and comfortable from entrance to when I exit.
Yeah. Sure. So. Other than the big scary dog up there, right?
I know how that goes. Can I ask you another question, if you don't mind?
100%.
Absolutely.
What is like, do you guys have a 1, 5, 10 year? Is this like a hobby that you're just doing fun? What are some of the goals you have for this? Is this to help the real estate? Because I'm sure this kind of correlates, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of where it stemmed from, really, is I was a guest on Murph's podcast. Yeah, it was really fun, and him and I were already getting together once a week to film content. Like, we'd sit down, and it started out with me just like coming up with like a script. All right, I want to talk about an FHA loan, and I, you know, but it always sounded like I was reading off a script. So eventually Murph was like, okay, what do you want to talk about today? And so he just like asked me questions, and I just riff on the mic for 5 minutes, and then he'd just like clip out the best minute or two, and that was the Instagram reel. And then,
by the way, you talked about my memes. But dude, you produce some funny. The one where you're like, if you're not this big, keep your fucking mouth down. Yeah. You're like, hey guys, I'm sorry. I died.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite ones.
I fucking love that one.
Yeah. The last one.
This is you. Yeah. Shut the fuck. Everyone's like, yeah, this is you.
Keep your mouth. Yeah. Keep your voice down.
Keep your tone down or something. Yeah. Hey guys, I got this new listing.
Dude, I remember I was watching that. I was like, holy shit, I was dying laughing. My wife was like, shut up. I was like, baby, watch this. Fucking genius.
Yeah.
The last one too, where you're just sliding.
Yeah, oh, that was good. Yeah, because first we were run, like I was like getting like a running start and like sliding on my shoulder. He's like, man, and then like popping up to my elbow to do the thing. He's like, it'd be so much funnier if you could slide in like this. I was like, yeah, but I'm not ready to like ruin my shoulder just for this video, you know? Like, he's like, well, I'll just get it because I'll put the camera on a tripod and I'll just grab your legs and slide you in.
No one understands the behind the scenes.
That's what I was like after we posted it. I was like, God damn it. Why didn't I set my phone up and get like a video of you posting this? Or, like, you, because that would have been so funny. But anyway, like, as I was saying, it started out with us.
Just real quick though.
Yeah.
That is genius marketing.
Thank you.
Because now more than ever, I know that you guys did the sponsors at the beginning and talked off the record, but people now, and this is not me saying this, this is like market research. People value authenticity than anything else in terms of marketing. So like the ad reads and stuff like that, you will start seeing those become less and less relevant. You will start seeing people in general conversation. That's what I believe. So like when you're doing the memes, but the memes are the portal for you selling a home, already ahead of. Because that's authentic. That's genuinely funny. I'm not even interested in buying the home. Now I'm watching your video because I'm like,
see the
this
house,
motherfucker's
fun. Yeah.
Now, I'll buy a home.
I hooked you in. You know, yeah, I got you. I mean,
maybe we need this 2-bed, 1-bath.
Money. I think we need
this. Look at this guy. He's funny.
I want to buy it. No, but the whole reason, I started just doing, getting with Murph, you know, we were already getting together once or twice a week. I did his podcast and I was like, you know, and being such a, like a fan and consumer of podcasts, I was like, maybe we should just get together once a week and just record the whole time. I'm sure I'll say something you can clip out. And because originally it was just for the social media reels or like for the short clips, because that's what I was already doing to help promote my business. And then it just kind of turned into like, all right, well, instead of just promoting just the business, like let's kind of make like a personal brand. You know, actually Pat posted, it was that yesterday or that's the day right. before. Yeah,
it was 1 year to the day that he sent me the text.
Yeah.
He proposed to me.
I proposed to him. Yeah, I was, because man, I don't know if I want to just take on the responsibility of just me and doing it all by myself. And I was like, well, who do I know that I'm good friends with already that, you know, we have so many similar interests. And Pat was one of those guys. I mean, we would talk on the phone almost every day, work related. Wow. But then those kind of, you know, it was like he's one of those people that, you know, you call to talk about an update with a client. It turns into an hour conversation. It's just one of those people I feel like I can talk to, you know, and you vibe with. And I was like, all right, well. You know, he's a former pro baseball player. I've already heard a lot of those funny stories and crazy stories. Like, I'm sure those will be funny to talk about in the podcast. We're both dads. We're both athletes. We're both in real estate. Like I couldn't think of a better person, but I had this like text written out for like 2 or 3 days. Cause I was like, it's a big thing to like ask someone to like do like a big commitment. You know, you gotta, you know, I'm asking you to spend a couple hours with me every week for like the next foreseeable future.
And, was there ever, forgive me for asking this, backup of a sudden?
No.
And then when
I probably would have just did it myself, to be honest.
When you got the text, what was your...
I just said yes within two seconds.
Yeah. Like it was like he responded immediately, and awesome. I was like, yeah. He was like, "Fuck yeah, let's do it!" And I was awesome. Like, "Holy shit!" And sent that text on like a Wednesday. And
no, I was in Kansas City for a Chiefs game, actually on my way to tailgate, and I was working up a clip for you for the what's the payment videos I was doing, and I was like, "Hey, I'll have this up in a second." And then like you sent me that text, and I was like. Literally text getting ready, like saying yes. And then my buddies are in the background like, hey, chug a beer. Like, hey, I'm like, chug a beer, finish the text, hit send. So yeah, it was like all within 2 minutes.
So he was heavily inebriated when he said yes. Yeah. Now he's committed.
Now he's committed.
shit. Oh, man.
What am I committed to? Fuck.
How much money did you put into this?
Well, I started to say yes before I had to start chugging beers. But yeah.
The yeah. why was in there, as in, why would we do this?
Right, yeah.
And then yes followed.
Yeah. Yeah, he said yes, like, immediately, and I was like, man, why was I even worried? Because I was like, it's a big thing to ask someone. Like, me and Pat are friends, but, like, I don't know if we're, like, friends like that. You know, like, I just didn't, you know, because obviously over the course of the year, him and I have gotten way closer than we were before. I mean, absolutely. We were friends before this, but like, I feel like, I mean, you know, you and I our friends have become, yeah, you know, just taken another exactly. like, level up. Cause well, I was, you know, as we spend this much time together and
you've combined networking circles now.
Yeah.
I know you don't consider this a job. This is more of like a passion project, but like this is work. For me.
Yeah. It
you
is
guys
work.
Spend
yeah.
time doing this. Yeah. And now you guys have in that Venn diagram shared each other.
Yeah.
You guys already had that before real estate, but now you have that even.
Oh, right. 100%.
Oh, for sure. And yeah, I mean, that was the biggest thing, but because I didn't, when he sent me that, I immediately said yes. And I knew that we would figure out what we were going to talk about. Obviously, I knew that it was going to have some sort of real estate aspect to it because that's what we do. But then we got back and I think he texted me on a Sunday. I'll have to go back and look and see what the 10th
is. Oh, if you were at a tailgate, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah. I can't remember if I was on the way to a tailgate or if I was on, well, we were on our way to drink somewhere. And my buddies were in a car and they were handing me beers.
Pat is
a
baseball player.
and I was with other baseball players, former baseball players. But yeah.
Shocker.
Right. Yeah. but yeah, so like I knew that that there was something that we could talk about. I knew with his background with sports, my background with sports, that there would be something. But ultimately, once we sat down, Murph's like, all right, we need to figure out what it is we're going to talk about and what we're going to do with the show, what direction we want to go. And the biggest thing for us was like, you know, just about how like men are portrayed, fatherhood, like the difficulties of being a father.
You don't have a Bugatti?
Yeah.
Guess we're all failures.
Yeah. So like you know, talking about that, like things like that. And it just like manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, you know, and the mentality that it takes to be successful. Those were those core things. And that's what this is about, but like doing it in a positive way. There's so much negativity out there.
When you say, forgive me for interrupting you, say positive way, what are you referring to as the negative way?
So like male toxic masculinity or, you know, the struggles of being a father and like
not like men feeling adequate because they're struggling as a father, or like bringing light to those, like, hey, you're not the only one that's feeling this way. Like, it's okay to not feel that way. And then the mentality of things, like back in the day, you know, men had to be tough, show no emotion. Well, that's not true. Like, as a man, you need to have that emotional intelligence to be able to move forward and be able to be successful and all of that. So we wanted to bring light to these subjects that, one, him and I were both struggling with and we've talked about, and make people feel like, hey, you're not alone in this, and putting a positive spin on that and making it to where we're starting a community of people that are okay to admit, like, hey, yeah, I'm struggling, but hey, look, how can I help? Like, what can we do to help? How can we be a resource for you to talk, you know, like that you listen to us and you can get an inspiration, like, hey, you're not alone in that.
Well, here comes the first argument we have. Hey, but before I start this, how much time do we have left?
Well, oh, another
20 minutes.
Yeah, you got, or yeah. So, yeah.
Okay, we're not limited? Okay, no, cool. Then let's start this. I actually think, and I'd be interested to hear what you guys think, that we are too soft as men. And that and the pendulum has swung so much into this emotional intelligence and all this bullshit that we actually need some fucking hard men. We need some toxic masculinity. That's my I don't think we need Andrew Tate.
So I think
we need some of those tenants.
That's exactly what we were talking. That's what we've talked about, is like these traits that they're saying are toxic in men, like competitiveness and I'd love to go back to that.
Greed.
Well, there was a lot of things I'm like, that's not toxic. Like, those aren't things that are toxic that are being labeled as toxic. So we need to clear that up right now, that's not toxic. That's just that's being a strong man. But I also do think that the emotional side of things, not so much like having the emotional intelligence to realize, like, hey, something's wrong, and being able to admit that and work on that, not just being.
Do you think that should be external or internal?
I mean, it's an internal battle that you're having, but it's okay to voice it. It's okay to talk about it.
That's where I disagree.
See, that's the thing, is like, the way I was raised is like, you're not supposed to have any emotions as a guy. You're not supposed to have those feelings, but that's not true. You're still going to have them, and they're going to be bottled up inside you. And if you don't know how to regulate those, yeah, you need to regulate those as on the inside, as for yourself, so you can be better moving forward. But it's not terrible to talk about them with someone else. I mean, I go to therapy. Like, therapy is something that's changed my life, to being able to talk to somebody about these things and work through things with somebody else. And I'm just being a vessel, using this as a vessel for me also to talk about the things that I'm working on. So people don't realize, like, hey, you're not alone in this. It's okay to have those feelings, have those emotions, but work on them. Doesn't mean you have to be vocal and tell every single person about them. But I do think that one of the questions that we posed was, would you rather have an IQ or an EQ, a high IQ or a high EQ? And I said, you can have a high IQ and a low EQ, but you can't have a low EQ and a high IQ, or a high, you can't have a high EQ and a low IQ. You have to have both. And so I would say that having a high emotional intelligence leads to higher intelligence, which, as a man, that's what we're striving for, is intelligence. We want to be intelligent. Women find that attractive. And so I think having that high emotional intelligence leads to a high intelligence. And I just think that knowing those emotions, being able to feel those emotions, being able to understand those, like I said, it doesn't mean you have to talk about it. I just talk about it on here just because this is a vessel to reach other people. And so that's why I talk about it. Doesn't mean everyone else has to talk about it. Doesn't mean you have to talk about it. Doesn't mean Zach has to talk about it. Doesn't mean we have to have conversations about how we're feeling. But just know that I'm doing it as a way to, like, let people know, like, hey, it's okay to.
I agree and disagree. I agree with 98% of what you said.
Okay.
And only because you extrapolated that thought and you actually build bridges between you and I. I agree with the emotional intelligence side. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go back to a masculinity where it's like, suck it up, pussy, nothing matters,
right,
work and die. I don't want to do that. But I also want to embrace the fact that men are loved on the basis of what they can do.
Oh, absolutely.
Both protector and provider, because 100%. I benefit from that. 100%
yeah.
I benefit.
Oh, and that's the thing, too, is like, I 100% agree with you on that. Now, if I didn't make that clear in what I was saying, no, I think we're probably on the same page 100%, because I 100% agree with that. Like, man, as a man, you are, that's your role as provider and protector.
Well, let me go a step further though. Like, cause you're talking about, like, I think there is one person on this planet that I can truly speak freely with. Okay. And that's my wife.
Right.
Even then, I can't speak 100% true.
You
There's
think so?
No one on this planet other than God when I pray that I can speak 100% true to explain.
Okay.
Even in my abundant confidence, even in my, I'm a douchebag to the core, brother. Oh. Even when I was little. You know what I mean?
I'm with you.
I've only grown more empathetic with age because of the wisdom of time. I have my doubts. I have my moments of weakness. But if, you know, your boss ever came in and started talking about all the things that are on his or her plate and started like extrapolating to you all their doubts and all that stuff, you started thinking to yourself, like, man, this girl shouldn't be in a leadership position. The same way I look at a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, the same way I look at an entrepreneur starting sole proprietorship is the same way I look at a father at home. I tell my wife 85% to 90% of things, but 10% tell her. I don't fucking tell. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
You don't need to know. Keeps me up at night because I'm working on that limit itself. When I was 18 years old, I remember I used to stay up at night thinking, I don't want to be a loser. I want to make enough money to sustain myself. I want a wife and kids and all this other stuff. Now I have all everything that 18-year-old Arion used to stay up at night wondering about is done. Mm-hmm. And then some.
Right. And it changes. Everything that you're going through will evolve and change.
But staying up at night hasn't.
Right.
32-year-old Arion stays up just as much as 18-year-old Arion does, but on different fucking shit. Different shit. Different levels of shit. And now I have the responsibility of everything. All my employees, my employers. I think that emotional intelligence was a vector that was missing from our previous generation. But in that pursuit, we swung the pendulum too far.
Absolutely.
Yes.
100%.
Now we need a little bit of more toxic masculinity to get to that.
See, but that's the thing is like things that you're saying is toxic masculinity. I don't think those are toxic. Like those, I don't think those things
like
are.
Society deems them as toxic.
Society.
But
ask a feminist.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, but
ask a feminist.
You're right. A feminist is going, but in general, most people aren't going to, like, I don't feel like those are toxic.
That's a loaded term. Most people?
Yeah.
Who's most people?
That's true.
You feel me? Because we're in our own echo chambers. Maybe the most people within our group.
Right.
I guarantee when you go to jiu-jitsu, most people.
Right.
When you're, you know, at a business dinner or something, most people. What happens when you're at like a public function or something? Bro, I've been surprised at my surroundings at times when I say things. I'm like, oh, what? You don't view this the same way I do? And they're like, it's that or the other. And I don't have the fucking time to educate them on what they're wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
Nor do I have the inclination. But I like the message. Mm. But I also want to iterate one thing that is toxic masculinity personified. The progression of humanity was led by men, supported by women. If we change that paradigm now more than ever, get ready for destruction. Get ready for destruction. The rest of the world is still, I'll say, you know, fuck it. You can cut this out if you want. If you're a black man or black woman, your life has never been better in America ever before in human history. If you're a woman in America, your life has never been better than ever before in human history. If you're any minor, if you are not a white Anglo-Saxon man from the mountains, if you're a Eurasian Peninsula man like myself or from the Caucasus Mountains, better hope that you're, you know, some Irish descent, because then your life has never been better than it is today. If America didn't exist, I'd be like some sheep herder, a hashish farmer in the mountains of Albania. The reason I say that is we have, for the last 4 years, gone down this path of self-destruction, not at the betterment of everybody else, but at the destruction of masculinity, manhood as it is. You can have both the empowerment of women, the empowerment of minorities, the empowerment of everybody. Do not lose sight of the ones who allow for that empowerment. It is men. In conjunction with women, I am a better man because of my wife. But I don't want to live in a world where my wife is ruling my house, making those decisions. She makes 95% of the decisions in the house. 95% of them. The five that I make are like the trajectory of our lineage. I fuck this up. Our kids will feel this. You were asking me off camera about my immigration status and all this other stuff. And I've said this before, but I'll say it again because I think it rings true. My parents were lower middle class to poor the entirety of my childhood. They made one decision that fundamentally changed the trajectory. My daughter benefits from the decision my father made. That was to come to America. They could have stayed in Albania. They could have lived the life that they had. But my father led my mother, because my mother wanted to say, like, hey, we know this. Like, you know, my father led my mother, took the chance, took the risk, shouldered that burden, that responsibility. Came to America, didn't know a fucking lick of English. Did it legally, by the way, by year five. We fled to Greece, came over after we got our green card and our papers. Lived in America for the entirety of our life. They know nothing. My mother only knew struggle and poverty and trying to make it until the day she died. My father gets to bear the fruits of that decision because my father lived. My mother unfortunately passed away. But my father has like the, I can only imagine the pride my father has as a man to make a decision 32, 31 years ago and to see now your sons and what they're creating. Because like whatever you think of me, gentlemen. Ooh, I got a brother who's older, 3.5 years. Take me, times it by 10. Intelligence, wealth, entrepreneurial spirit. He's just better than me in every way, other than looks. And I think to myself sometimes when, you know, because like we'll be at dinner, like all these things I said about toxic masculinity and stuff like that, my father personifies. But now at 62 years old, we'll go to dinner and he'll just like randomly cry. I'll be like, Dad, what's going on? He's like, just so proud. I'm just so happy. And it wasn't until I had my daughter that I fucking realized. That's why I say like all men should have kids, is because you start going from making decisions about yourself. And by the way, toxic masculine decisions. I want to fuck. I want to eat. I want to drink. I want to do all these things. You start making decisions for the greater good of my family, my children, of their lives. Now everything I do, my needs are met. I'm sure you guys are doing fine. So now you're at this esteemed, like, you are experiencing something that 99.9% of humans that have ever existed have never experienced, and that's the option of thriving, not just surviving. Do with that the due diligence it fucking deserves. Stop letting other people who don't know dick about shit talk to you about what it's like to have that responsibility. I'm not here for that fucking conversation. Do not tell me, if you're not like me, how to be like me. Just like I don't go to black women and tell them how to be black women. I don't go to Asian men and tell them how to be Asian men. Don't fucking tell me how to be a white man. Go fuck yourself. I'm going to walk that path. And if I'm wealthy for it, you know what you should do instead of demonizing me? Start looking at what I'm doing. Imitation is the greatest form of flattery. Learn it.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. Yeah,
no, I love all that.
Yeah, no, I think it's...
I went down the path.
No, that's the thing is, like, I think we feel the same way. I think just the way that we're saying it is different. And 100%, like, as a man, you're leading your household. And having been single for now 2.5 years and entering the dating world, that's what most women want, is a man that's making decisions and is financially responsible and taking charge. They want that. And it's just an innate emotion that they have.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
Don't have to answer this.
Sure.
Why did it not work out with this woman? What was it that caused that? Was it the way you thought? Was it the direction of life? Did you?
So with my ex-wife?
Yes.
So we went, so it just, everything just happened so quickly. So my ex-wife is Bosnian. So similar story to you.
Geographically, we're neighbors.
Yeah. Coming to America and all that. But fundamentally, we were both different in her thoughts and my thoughts in terms of political views. That was a big thing that we got into a lot of arguments about, was political views. But everything happened so quick. Like, we were only dating for 3 months, and then she got pregnant with my son. And then from there, getting engaged and getting married, and then another.
Did you guys do that because of the pregnancy?
Yes. And that was part of it. Like, we confused infatuation for love. And we never dated. We never really connected. We just thought, like, yeah, we'll figure it out as we go. And it just never happened. And we just started going our separate ways. And then eventually it just got to a point where we were roommates in raising kids. I mean, so.
Was there ever a conversation had, like, feel this slipping? What can we do to sustain this? Or was it like neither of you wanted to try to remedy?
We had conversations about it, and we're like, all right, how are we going to fix this? How do we move forward from here? And we would go at it for like 2 weeks, and all of a sudden it would just slip back into the normal form, and then that was that. And so we decided to get separated to see how that would work. And then she met someone else, fell in love, and that was that. And, you know, and honestly, it was like a weight was lifted off our shoulders. Like, it got to the point where things were just really bad between us, where we were fighting all the time, saying things that we shouldn't be saying to each other. And it just got really bad. And we didn't want our kids to see that. I didn't want my two sons to think this is how their father should be treated. And I didn't want them to think like, hey, this is how you treat your wife. You need to see some, you need a better example of that. So we separated, and her and I have a better relationship now than we ever did when we were married. And her boyfriend is incredible. I think he's a great guy. He is amazing with my kids, and he loves my ex-wife more than I ever did. And she loves him more than she ever loved me. And I'm fine with that, because now they're getting to see a really good example of what a relationship should look like on their end. They're still getting to see a relationship, have a relationship with me. We've custody wise. So they get that relationship, and now they get to see a healthy relationship between me and my ex-wife. Hell, so healthy that I'm driving in a car with my ex-wife's boyfriend to Florida for Christmas, and she's flying with our two kids and going to my parents' house in Florida for Christmas. And we're going to spend a week together in Christmas. We've done this multiple times. Like, that's just the dynamic and where we've come and where we were at. It's just, we were two people that we should not have gotten married.
This is a paradigm where I think the toxic masculinity does die. Because tell the previous generation, like, I'm driving my ex-wife's boyfriend to Florida, and they'll start saying all the derogatory things you can say.
No, I get it all the time.
But one of the things that the previous generation did is they stuck together.
Right.
Have a generation. I don't want to say a generation. Forgive me. You have a slew of people,
right,
that had to grow up in an environment that was not conducive to their general well-being and mental growth. And that's the relationship they see. So, like, boys think that's how you treat a woman.
Right.
Women, that's appropriate to be treated. That is an aspect. When I said 98%, I do think that there's room for. Jordan Peterson had a quote about peacefulness, how you need the propensity for violence in order. I think masculinity is toxic masculinity in order to be masculine, because you need to know to also back. I need to be the pillar of my family. I need to be the protector, the provider, and all these other things. If at any point I fall short of that duty, I need to be self aware and step back.
Yeah.
I cannot do this properly. I'm not properly.
Right.
I'm not saying this is like a leadership thing. It could also just be, you want to go a different direction than I do. Like I said at the beginning, I was lucky enough to find a woman, like, fell in line, believed in me, backed me, and we benefited from that. But at any time, she could have been like, no. I would have said, yes, now you're going left and I'm going right. Is that good or bad? No, it just is.
I guess my biggest thing is just, like, the term toxic masculinity. It's like
subjective.
Right. And it's going to be different to everybody. So it's just like, let's just get rid of the word fucking toxic and call it masculinity.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with being masculine, but
I think feminism and I think femininity and masculinity are, you can get to a point in all things in life. Also the rules, like gender roles, where it's just too much. You see it politically, you see it economically. You see it in every other aspect of life. I think just like we try to adapt our lives in our various ways to give a little bit, get a little bit. I think that's what masculinity needs to be. The only reason I was like so fervent in that initial thought, and I do believe that we see eye to eye on these things for sure, is that for the last 4 years, we've been attacked.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. One-sided pushing us towards a direction of femininity, that we need an initiative of, like, maybe a little too much. Not forever. If it was 4 years, 6 years that we've been attacked, maybe 3 years, swing that pendulum a little bit too much to get back to that equilibrium. I worry about generation of men in high school, college, that grew up under the last 4 years, don't know how to fucking. And that is going to be ripple effects, not just for us.
No, but generations ago.
No, for women. Because who do women want? Mm. Put 10 women behind a closed door and be like, what kind of man do you want? I want a leader, a provider. I want to fuck my brains out. I want to make a lot of fucking money.
That's what my last 2.5 years of dating's been like.
Yeah. So it's like all these women that are saying like all this shit that they quote unquote want, they're the single ones. Ask a married woman. That's why married women came out for, I don't want to get political, but every demographic, Trump did better this time around than last time around, with the exception of black women. Married women were more for Trump this time around than last time around after 4 years. Why do you think that is? Because married women are in close proximity to the responsibilities and the leadership potentials of a man. They want to make sure that their man is not inhibited by other things other than his choices. They're closer to that. Women don't have the repercussions for actions the way men do that we inherently had since birth because they're women. And I don't think they should, personally. I want to protect and provide for my wife. I don't want her to feel like she needs to get drafted. She needs to earn as much as me, or she needs to work as much as me. I don't want her to do that. I want her to have the luxuries that she has. That's what I work hard for. And I think that
boys, we're about to camera's about to die.
All right,
we're gonna have to wrap it up. I'm sorry,
gentlemen.
No, this was incredible. Thank you so much, Aaron.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. Yeah. Well, I definitely have to have you on because there's a lot of stuff I didn't even get to that I wanted to.
Yeah, and so one last...
You got to hop on mine if you don't mind.
Absolutely. I'd love to have you. We can dive into this more.
Yeah.
But one last thing before we go. We call the tombstone game. All right, so here lies Arion. What's it say on your tombstone?
Left it better than he found it.
Perfect.
All right, guys, thank you so much for tuning into the episode. If you haven't hit that subscribe button yet for us, please hit that for us and hit the like button, comment what you guys thought below, and we'll see you next time.